Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal, and I've got a little story for you guys today. So I would say probably sometime in March of this year, you know, when all of the stuff started to go down with you know what, I was scrolling on Instagram. Yeah, I follow so many tarot card la la stuff, and somehow I landed on this picture of this beautiful round deck that had all of these like adorable drawings of animals. And if you know me, you know I love animal decks. I think intuitively animals come to me a lot. So I tend to use animal decks a lot in my readings. And I saw this particular animal deck and I was like, oh my God, like I have to have this. Like it's calling my name. So upon further research, I was like, what is this called? Who made it? And Instagram kind of led me to Jamie Sawyer, who is our guest for episode 51. And she's also the creator of the Sawyer's Nature Portal Oracle Deck, which is the animal deck that I'm talking about. And she's also created other decks as well. And originally, my idea for this episode, when I was just like, all right, I gotta talk to this deck creator. We gotta talk about animals. That was sort of my main idea for what we should talk about. But upon further research into who Jamie is, I discovered that she's a tattoo artist. And I was like, oh man, like this is going to be so cool because, you know, I don't know about you guys, but when we say the word healer, we think of the tarot reader, we think of like the Reiki practitioner or the astrologer, but sometimes we don't think of the tattoo artist as being a healer. At least I don't, because I just don't, I guess previously I didn't have the perception of a tattoo artist kind of being a healer in any way, right? But the more and more I kind of went on my own journey of being a healer, I realized that tattoo artistry is one of the most profound, intense healing experiences that you can have. And I think tattoo artists are very much like body workers. They're holding space for our trauma. They're holding space for our healing. And I knew that this was probably also something that Jamie and I should talk about. So this episode, we talked a lot about the intersection of tattoo artist and healer. And Jamie sort of gives her take on self-love, on boundaries. We talk about what it's like to tattoo a tarot card on someone's body, which Jamie has done multiple times. She gives us her take on certain tarot cards like the Tower and the Death card. And we also, at the end, we do talk about animals. We talk about her animal deck specifically and how we can sort of create our own stories and our own meaning when it comes to animal medicine and animal imagery. So I just loved this conversation. I learned a lot from Jamie in our short talk. And I think, you know, when it comes to interviews on this podcast, I really like what I've been able to do, which is just find really cool healers and just shoot the shit with them and just openly talk about sort of our struggles and our challenges, but also our successes in being healers. And although I really do like to put out these episodes for you all, I think it's purely selfish at this point with, you know, who I want to talk to, because I just want to talk to them because I want to know, you know, I want to know about their journey and I want to know what they can teach me. So really every interview I've done the guest has really profoundly taught me something that I can carry into my own journey as a healer too. So I know you guys will find something cool out of this episode. It's an awesome one. So I put all of Jamie's information in the show notes. We talk a lot about her decks, which can all be found on Etsy. Her website's down there, and also her Instagram is down there as well. So definitely check her out on Etsy. She has one of the coolest Etsy pages I've ever seen. She has a wide array of very cool things that she makes. And also, I recently bought a mask from her, so can't wait to get that in the mail. And let us know what you think about this episode, and I will talk to you guys next time.
So, actually, my first question for you is, in my limited perception of who you are from my Instagram stalking and my stalking of your website, it seems like you're a very multi-dimensional healer in a way, and a multi-dimensional artist. And it seems like you really enjoy playing with all these different modalities, because not only are you a tattoo artist, but you also are a deck creator, and you are also like an Etsy seller, and you make these masks now. And I kind of want to know, how do you define yourself as like the artist, or how is your like artistry kind of almost evolving right now, I guess?
I often joke that I'm a creative mind with a lack of vices. Like, I don't do drugs. I rarely ever drink. My brain is always going. So it's kind of like, if I get an idea, my brain goes, okay, how can I make this? How can I do this? How can I do this? You know, like, my tarot deck came into creation because of a tattoo that somebody wanted. I'd always dabbled with tarot, but it never really became first, like, front and foremost until this client wanted a Two of Cups tattoo, but drawn in like a different style. So I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, oh, maybe I'll do the Queen of Swords. And then I was like, did I just start creating my deck? I wasn't really involved in the tarot community then, so I didn't know what you're not supposed to put in the deck, how many people of color you're supposed to do. I didn't know all the rules. So for me, my deck is very much for me. Like, I didn't even think people were going to want it, you know? So when I did publish it, I only got like 500 printed. So now I have them on Printer Studio for print on demand, but that kind of was like my gateway into the tarot community, but I've always been into art. Sewing was my gateway into tattooing from, you know, I've been sewing since I was a child. So going back into now, I'm like, okay, well, I had a tattoo client ask if I could make her masks for her nursing home clients, or for her, you know, she works in a nursing home.
Right.
Sure. And then when I get obsessed with something, I've got to make a bunch. How I am. So that's kind of why it's like, it goes like this. It goes in and out. You know, I have some friends who are like, you're like my prototype maker. Like, I get an idea and Jamie can make it. You know?
I love that. Well, I love how sewing took you into tattooing, which took you into tarot. Mm-hmm. Now, with the state of the world, it's interesting. You're kind of arriving back at mm-hmm. that sort of original artistry, which is sort of the making of clothing or sewing yeah. things, and that's really beautiful.
I used to sew purses back early in my tattoo career, because I love fun fabrics. Like, you've seen which masks prints I have available and stuff. And I couldn't wear them because I was so covered in tattoos, I would just clash. It would look so ridiculous. So I made purses.
Oh my God, that's funny. Did you, so I want to know, what was your first experience with the tarot? I know you said like you didn't really dabble in tarot cards until you ended up sort of tattooing it on someone. But
well, I mean, that's kind of, I guess it's kind of false. It didn't take over my life until I started drawing my deck. Like, I got my first deck in 2000. My mom and I were wandering around Salem, and I actually got the Brian Froud Fairy Oracle. That was my first deck. And then my first tarot deck, I believe my mom gave me, it's a Morgan Greer deck. it always kind of was in my closet. You know, I always had, like, at that day, I remember in 2000 when mom and I did that, we bought our books of shadows. My mom has always been on the pagan, you know, cuff. We consecrated it. I remember doing a spell to become a tattoo artist and then forgot all about everything. And then, like, 14 years later, I was, like, going through some stuff and I find my book of shadows and I see this spell that I created and I was just like, holy crap, like, you know, let me update you. Let me tell you what's been going on for the past 14 years. So I was busy cultivating a career while most people who are like my tarot idols were busy cultivating their tarot practice. So it was kind of like it's always been on the periphery, but I guess I've used the premise of tarot and the psychology and all that, but I didn't realize, I just weren't using the cards, if that makes sense.
Oh, that makes total sense, because I think from the moment tarot enters our lives, whether we are incorporating it in our daily practice or not, I think it sticks with us because mm-hmm. there's something about the images. They are sort of the inside of our psyche, or they are the parts of our soul. So mm-hmm. it's something that, like, once you buy a deck, it's with you forever. Or once you kind of dip your toe into it, it's always there in the back of your mind.
Right. It's like those archetypes. It's like once you see them, you can't unsee them, you know? So it's like, I actually get stumped. Like, I love doing those collective readings that I do every day or every other, whenever. That's my easiest way to share a reading, because if you were like, Jamie, give me a reading, and I pick up a card and I go, I'm going to get stumped. I'm not going to know. Like, I look at the image and then I assume you want me to tell, you know, it becomes too much pressure. Whereas if I don't have the image, I can give you a great reading. That's why I say I read from my chair, because my hands are busy creating art and then I can just flow.
Right. Have you ever identified as a, like, intuitive or a tarot reader, or is it more like you want to have it more as like this hobby, or you want to read for the collective but not necessarily the individual?
I definitely think I'm an intuitive. From a lot of dabbling and a lot of self-discovery, I've realized that I feel like part of my purpose here is to help others find their own power. So I don't want you to come to me to tell you what to do with your life. I want to tell you how to empower yourself, you know? So it's kind of like the label tarot reader to me kind of terrifies me, because then it's giving me too much power. Like, we all have the tools that we need to make our lives better, but it's breaking through fears and breaking through our own imposed blocks or childhood trauma or all these things that get in our way because we believe this story of ourselves, you know? So it's like, when you label yourself, or when I label myself, then I'm limiting. So I just kind of allow, like, what do you need from me? You know, it's kind of like, I know it sounds egotistical to some people, but I'm like, what do you need? I will help you through this.
No, I like that. And I completely validate and resonate with what you just said, because, you know, I am a person who identifies as a tarot reader, and mm-hmm. you know, the amount of almost power that it can give you in certain situations is not something that I ever wanted. And mm-hmm. I actually, you know, I kind of have been able to, over time, like, manifest the client that wants just more of the guidance. Like, mm-hmm. But it really truly makes me nervous when I do feel that energy from another person that's like, right, please make this decision for me, or please, right, here's my power, like, you take it and, like, let me know. And it makes me anxious, because I'm like, wait. Right.
Well, it's okay. So I'm going to do like an analogy with tattooing, because it's been my life for so long. It is my job to take your idea and make it into an image and put it on your skin. Mm-hmm. It is your job to take care of that image and heal it.
Yeah.
And so many people, when they don't heal well, come back to me and say, well, it's infected. I'm like, well, it's not infected. How are you taking care of it? And then they tell me, and I say, okay, well, you're allergic to this ointment, or you're allergic to this, or you're, you know, it's like, they don't take the accountability. So a tarot reading is almost like designing that tattoo.
Yes.
Here is your reading. What you do with this and how you take care of this, that's on you. It's not on me. I have no control. I'm not going to go home with you. I'm not going to take care of your tattoo for you. I'm not going to make sure that you do what the card said, you know? So it's like people are so ready to give their power away when it's like, look, just take it back. Take what I told you, use it, apply it, see what works for you, leave the rest, you know? It's
oh, absolutely. And I think that's really maybe the, although we don't, I don't want to label you, but mm-hmm. it's sort of like that label of what you said, like, you know, what do you need? Come to me and tell me what you mm-hmm. need. That sounds like something a healer would say.
Mm-hmm. My mom, she's my biggest mentor and also at times my biggest student. And the older she gets, it becomes more of a student teacher, you know, but she's always like, the teacher appears when the student is ready. And I've seen that so many times in my life, you know, like, oh, I want to learn this. And then out of nowhere, somebody shows up. He's like, this is my profession. And you're like, oh, let me learn from you. You know, but my mother is such a healer. And she's always said, I want people to come and pay me to tell them things they already know. Because she's like, they already know this, but they've forgotten it. Or, you know, there'll be times where her and I are having a huge conversation and I'll give her her own words. And then she jokes, she's like, take my advice, I'm not using it, you know, because she forgot she even said those at one point in time, you know, so it's like, we know it, but we need somebody to help us rediscover it.
Oh, I love that. That's really, yeah, that really is, I think, the job of the healer. Like, we're mm-hmm. just trying to help others re-remember who they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not our job to tell them, but it's our job to kind of maybe hold the space for them to sort of rediscover that. And yeah, that's really beautiful. You know, thinking along the lines of like healer, and you know, even the word healer is kind of problematic. Like I almost prefer like healing facilitator or something like that. But I think there's so many healing modalities. Of course, like spirituality has become like particularly trendy in the past 5 years. You know, there's mm-hmm. astrologers, psychics, tarot mm-hmm. readers, Akashic Records readers. And sometimes we don't actually include, or we forget to include, the tattoo artist in that mm-hmm. in that list of healing, which is kind of, I don't want to say it's insulting, but when I was really thinking about it, it's such an intense healing modality, actually.
It is. And in that vein, I'm just going to touch on that for a second. There's a lot of tattoo artists that don't recognize that they have that power, if that makes sense. Like, the tattoo community is one that's, I mean, like I said, I've been in and around it for like 20 years, and I've seen it go from, there's not a lot of empowerment, and maybe there is now, like over the past 5 years, I've seen people actually support each other. But before that, it was very much a competitive industry. So there's so much ego in the tattoo world that there's only a small amount of the artists that are just now realizing how important their jobs are beyond the picture that they're putting on somebody's skin. You know what I mean? Like, so it's definitely a healing industry. Like, you don't know why that person's coming to you. Sometimes they'll share, sometimes they won't. And some people understand their power and others are just kind of like, yeah, look at that cool picture I did on you. You know, so it's there's definitely, you have the healers that don't realize that they're healing.
Yeah.
You know?
I could imagine that, you know, even if the tattooer isn't completely aware of the healing that they're doing, I could imagine that sort of the, I want to say like the energetic side effects of mm-hmm. being a healer still applies to them. And I would think that there's still like a great amount of burnout and a great amount of like emotional processing that sort of has to be done on the tattoo artist's behalf.
It is. It's something like I've discussed with my husband a lot this past month, where the one thing that I noticed, like, I miss the connections that I have with my clients. I miss this. I miss the talking, the banter, catching up, you know, some people come in and from the moment they come in, it's a therapy session. You know, what I don't miss is the people pleasing that I have to do every single day. So meaning, even if I know the client, I still, okay, here's this thing I drew for you. Are you going to like it? You know, it's like being that kid from school, bringing home the picture to their parent and be like, look what I drew for you. Do you like it? Is it worthy to be hung up on your fridge? That I go through at least 3 times a day, like, cause I have like 3 appointments a day and I haven't had that. So I've been so relaxed cause I haven't had to please anybody. It's like the artwork that I have out there, if you want it, you can buy it. If not, cool. But like in the tattoo world, yeah, they come to you with a design or an idea and you have to take their idea and make it into art. I've gotten to a point where most of my clients love what I draw, but they're still like, what if they don't? So it's that constant, you know, so how you're saying the burnout, I've been like, this has been a huge battery recharge for me.
Actually, same. Or like even, you know, I know you're not able to do your work because your work requires 100% that you must be in person. But even me, like the amount of in-person readings that I do have decreased by 100%. And mm-hmm. I feel it in my aura. I feel myself just having more power because I don't have other people's energy, like in my energy. And I'm like, yeah, I really like
so you're like, so okay, so how can I make the 100% that was in person go into like a Zoom reading? Or, you know, like it's showing me that there's still a way we can share our gifts without having to be in person. So I look at this giant pause as you're not less than who you were just because you can't be there in person. You know, I've even thought like, if people need me, I want to be able to make myself available even if I can't tattoo them. Like, do you need to chat? Cool, let's talk. You know, I've been texting a lot more clients. It's stuff I never would do. But with tarot, you could even do that. Okay, like, look, you're going to get just as good of a reading from me, whether it's over the phone or through Zoom, or even some people just do email, you know, like, but I know a lot of people feel that they need to be there with you. And that's not always true.
I totally agree. Yeah. And there's, there's this implication, especially with tarot. Like, I can't tell you how many times people have asked me, like, how do you do a reading from a distance? Like, how do you do it if I'm not there? And I'm like, you know, intuition doesn't require you to be here with me, you know, like, intuition is kind of timeless. And so it's funny that you say that.
It's like breaking through that belief system. Where does it come from? It's like, you know, okay, if you order something online, right, you're not sitting there making sure the person's making it, but yet it arrives and it's still what you wanted. The same thing.
Yes, totally. I want to know a little bit more about like your journey to kind of becoming a tattoo artist, and maybe even I think the tattoo artistry industry, if I can call it that, it sort of it might be questioning itself right now with sort of these new ideals of being trauma informed and having boundaries and having consent between the artist and the client. And when you were first starting out, did you kind of have an awareness of this stuff?
No, not at all. When I first started, it was a man's field. And being female, I had to prove that I was one of the guys. And, you know, like, there's things that I've done in my past in order to get what I wanted that I would be appalled of today. You know, I can remember my teacher, the guy who taught me to tattoo, if we would all go out to the bar, if he liked a girl, I would be his wingman, you know. And that's something nowadays. It's like, just because I'm a female doesn't mean I'm on your side. Like, I'm on his side because he's teaching me what I want. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of shitty, but that's like, that's a truth. Like, it was a guy's club. I was in their circle of trust. I was one of the boys. I've always been one of the boys, you know? And over the years, as I've changed, I've shifted, I realize my clients that come to me have shifted. I used to work in a big conglomerate tattoo shop. There was like 10 artists. I was the only girl, you know, like you said, is there anything that's off topic? No, because I have really, like, I can be off topic, you know, like off color. But in that same respect, it's helped me shape who I am. But then I started realizing, like, probably about 5 years ago or so, even longer, that I needed my own space, because my idea of what I wanted to practice was no longer in alignment with that big shop conglomerate, with that, you know, loud, heavy music, you know, like, no red walls, no, like, our shop was red and black. It was so, you walked in there, you're like, ah, you know, but my shop is like, it looks like you're entering a robin's nest. It's browns, the pinks, and, you know, and the music is there, but it's not overpowering because I like to talk to my clients. So it's different, you know, like the needs have shifted, and I can only really speak for my own journey, but I've seen a lot more men getting into the industry that the guys who taught me to tattoo would be like, oh, they nerds don't belong in the tattoo industry. Meaning like the softer, you know, the softer side of man, a man who is in touch, or even just, you know, this whole thing, it's shattering this old school ideal of tattooing. It's like, it's not just burly biker shops anymore. You have women owned, you have people being like, look, it's not okay to make a girl strip down to her bra if you're tattooing her shoulder. You know, like, this is not okay. So there is a huge change in that. And there are some amazing female artists and just artists in general who are on the front lines of kind of like almost a Me Too movement in the tattoo community. I'm tired. I'm too old for this. I'm like, you have it, you do it. Like, I have my clientele. They know that it's a safe space.
Right. Well, how ironic is it that you started off in this like big kind of boys club, like you said, with like 10 other guys, you're the only girl, and now you have your own tattooing business that's called Sacred Space Tattooing. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like your way, you almost are reclaiming that like divine feminine within yeah. the tattooing world, which, like you said, was not even in people's minds even no. like 20 years ago.
I've had many times where a client would show up and maybe they didn't know who I was, or they were referred to me, or they never seen a picture or whatever before the internet, before Instagram, before all the things. And Jamie is an androgynous name. So they would show up and they would ask for Jamie, and I'd say, hey, here I am. And they go, but you're a girl. And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of crazy that I can tattoo with a vagina. I just don't know how I do it, but, you know, being handicapped is actually pretty awesome. Like, it was like, I would deflect it and be like very, bring it back to like their absurdity. And I remember asking one guy, I was like, well, is that a problem? He's like, no, I'm just a little like, I didn't expect it. And I'm like, okay. And then he ended up becoming one of my clients, you know? So it was just kind of like the, I don't know the word I'm looking for, the assumptions that people would make, because it was always such a male-dominated industry, you know? So it's not that women weren't in it, they just weren't as, like, put on pedestals, I guess, so.
Yeah, and, you know, once you did shift your practice mm-hmm. into, like, sacred space tattooing, and shifting your practice, like you said, into more of, like, an inviting, more relaxing space, mm-hmm. What did you, maybe this is too vague of a question, but I almost want to ask, like, what did you learn about trauma and its relation to tattooing?
I learned that, you know, one of the things, and I guess it was probably even a little bit before my shop opened, but it was just kind of like, because I am sacred space, no matter where I am, if I'm doing that, like, that's my, it doesn't need to be just the physical location, you know, like, I bring that to the table. And the people who come through my doors, some men, some women, some non-binary, some like, they've taught me so much about humanity and the world, and also being able to just connect, you know, the people who maybe have to be like hardened exterior in front of their social circles can just let it all be gone when they're with me. I've had men cry, you know, my one client, his wife, I do both of them, and she'll laugh. She's like, did my husband stop by and cry again? I'm like, look, he can cry here. I don't care. Like, losing an animal sucks. Like, I will cry with him. So it's definitely healing. I have another client who, they used to actually live in the building that my shop is in, and that building held a lot of trauma for them because of some horrific events that had happened. And coming through my doors and just allowing me to tattoo, you know, it's a female, and she says, you have healed parts of me that you will never know by letting me come in here and just experiencing this space in a different energy. You know, so to me, I was like trying to keep it together as she's telling me this, because it's huge. You know, I tattooed her daughter. I know about their history. I know about, it's a small town that we're in. I know about the rumors, you know, and for her to be able to come in there and just no longer have this looming doom over her, that is just awesome. And that it's like, that's not just me. I just help facilitate that. You know, I'm not taking credit for it. I just created the space for it.
Right. Oh, yeah. And I relate to that too. Like, you know, when you're working with someone in a healing context, like maybe they only know little bits and pieces about you, but yet you know a big part of them. And mm-hmm. it does feel emotional sometimes. Like sometimes after, I'm not sure if you do this ever, but like, and maybe it's just me because I'm a Pisces, but sometimes mm-hmm. after, you know, especially astrology readings, when I really get to hear someone's life, like mm-hmm. I get emotional after we hang up. Like, I feel like, wow, like that is just so, it's not even I'm sad, but it's just a very profound experience.
I think that we need to feel that. I think we need to allow ourselves to empathize with other people. Like, we don't have to get down deep and like take the trauma home, but we need to be there and be like, look, like, there's parts of me that have probably been affected, and your story is bringing that up enough for me to feel it. And just, and that to your client or to whomever you're sharing that space with, it helps them be seen. So it's like that they're not alone. You know, it's kind of like that gift that we have. Like, we need to reconnect with the people. Like, we're in an age where we're so connected because of all these devices, all these things, and we have never been more disconnected. You know, like, I think that's where a lot of the trauma comes from. Like, I can remember I had two friends that helped me survive high school, you know, and now there's kids who don't have the friend that they can ugly cry with, because everything is so already posted out there. There's nothing that's secret or sacred or just for them or just for their little clique or group, you know. And it's so important when you meet somebody else. And I think that's why we're able to give like our life stories to strangers, because it's a judgment-free zone.
Yeah. No, it's so true. That's why, because, you know, that's what's special about holding any kind of sacred space, because there's an implication that, like, you know, you as the sacred space holder, you're mm-hmm. a safe person. You know, you don't know this person in their real life, quote unquote, so they can kind of tell you anything. Oh. And that can be I find it to be a really profound gift, but I also have found that to be draining at times too, if I'm not taking care of myself. And I'm kind of wondering, like, what we can learn about almost, self-care sounds like such a cliche term right now, but as a tattoo artist, what are the self-care lessons that you have learned? And has there been times where you've completely let that go and just kind of burnt yourself out, or?
The biggest self-care for anybody who works with anybody that's outside of themselves is boundaries.
Yeah.
It's boundaries. And your boundaries, you will learn them over time as like my clients don't get my cell phone number. It's just not going to happen. If you have my cell phone number, it means you're no longer just a client. You're a friend, and you're not going to abuse that privilege. I don't do DMs for my tattoo work. Everything has to come through my email. And if it doesn't, then I'm not even going to consider it, because that's my boundary. my work is just through email. That's how you can get in touch with me. You know, Instagram for the tarot side of my Etsy and stuff, I've become more connected with that. So I do DMs on there and all that. But when it comes to my tattoo work, I have to have those boundaries in place. I've experienced burnout. I've cried more than I've ever cried over tattoo stuff throughout my life. And the reason that some of them may seem very harsh is because I've already been broken by it. So you have to have boundaries with whatever you put out there. If you don't have them, people will take more. They will always take more. And I don't think they do it in a malicious sense. It's just, you if you're too giving, they're going to keep taking and taking because that's how you already told them, this is okay for me. You know, so to establish a boundary in your work practice, even in your home practice, it's like you don't need to put a huge impenetrable wall. You could just be like, look, I'm only answering emails from this time. Or if you see me at the grocery store, we're not going to talk about your tattoo. You know, like we're not going to talk about a tattoo that you might never come to me and get because that's still energetic time. You know, so it's the boundaries. Like that is the biggest self-care. All the other stuff is just perks.
Oh, yes, I love that. And in a way, what you just said, I think healers can learn a lot from boundaries that like a therapist may have. You know, it's sort of like you don't, you know, text your therapist or like, mm-hmm. you don't like you, if you see your therapist in public, there's like this general implication that you must be the one to say hi first. They're not going mm-hmm. to come up to you. And, you know, I do sometimes like feel like those, like, you know, when you think of a therapist boundaries, you're like, wow, that seems like really harsh, but then you're in the position of a healer and you know why. Mm-hmm. Those boundaries are so important.
It's so funny you use that example. My husband, Tim, and I will go out, and I have a few clients that are from around this area, but most of my clients travel because I've moved, you know. And we'll be at like a local store and I'll see somebody and they're like, they'll go, hey. And I'm like, oh, hey, how are you? And they're like, good. And I'm like, okay. And then they just walk. He's like, who's that? I'm like, oh, those are one of my tattoo clients. And he goes, oh. And I said, honey, it's like a therapy session. I know some stuff on them. So we're not going to have a big catch up. We're just acknowledging that we know each other and we're both at the grocery store. You know, like yeah. You can't just be like, oh, so how was that thing with that guy? Or how was that? How's your child doing? Who's on drugs? Or how's, you know, like.
Oh my God. I relate so. Yeah, because it's like the last time you talked, that person was crying or that person was having a crisis.
Yes.
And when you see them next in a casual setting, it can't.
You can't bring it up.
How's the crisis going? You're like.
Yeah. So how's that crisis? I know you're just here for some vegetables, but how's your crisis doing?
Right. And yeah, oh my gosh, it's too funny.
That's what I told him. I was like, I know stuff about these people that probably their spouses don't know.
Right.
You know, and he was just like, oh, it's almost like we have this, like in, you know, in the medical field and in therapy and all that, like in any PhD, any person who has those number letters after their name, they have the HIPAA
right. contract.
We have one, but we've never actually put it into practice. Like we just being energy workers and healers and helping people through their trauma, we have to have that. We have to be like, okay, I'm not going to talk to so-and-so about this person's stuff because that's just wrong. You don't do it, you know?
Right. I always think that, you know, there's like I think it's called the Hippocratic mm-hmm. oath, and it's like yeah. thing you say before getting initiated into medical school. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like tattoo artists, sex workers, psychics, intuitives, we need to almost have our own sort of Hippocratic oath, like, you know, setting our intentions of like, these are my ethics, these are my
right.
And if you don't have that, then your practice is only as good as that.
My Hippocratic oath is just don't be a dick.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's the whole do unto others. And I'm going, like, I have a few rules that I follow. And one of them is basically I don't share things that publicly that I wouldn't want my mother seeing. And that's pretty loose boundaries because my mom's kind of. And it's also like having been on the back end of people backstabbing or talking, you know, talking down. It's like, I've had to learn myself, like, careful what your words say, like, careful what you do. You have this power, like, words have so much more power than we give them. So as I've gotten older, I gossip less. I'm like, I feel myself going, is this necessary? Like, do I really need to fill this empty space with this, you know, hurtful stuff or speculations? Because you don't know what that person's going through, you know? So it's almost like, as energy workers, even though we don't have a huge code of ethics, because ethics will vary given the person, I feel that there is this underlying current of like, look, what we do is so powerful, like, don't misuse it. You know, so it is like a Hippocratic oath, but there's always going to be the people who are con men and women and people, you know, who use that power for bad. But we're going to, that's the balance.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, it's funny, you know, kind of on a little bit of a lighter note, but not really, but, you know, in the implication of you kind of calling yourself and your tattooing business sacred space tattooing, I was noticing online when I was looking on your website, there's you tend to tattoo a lot of animals, a lot of I've seen a lot of tarot cards from you, with like tattooing all of these like almost spiritual or sacred things, like the meaning of an animal or the meaning of the tarot card. Have you kind of seen that person like truly embody that animal or that tarot card post tattoo? Like, do you feel like it actually changes them and gives them that energy of that animal or that card?
I definitely think that there's an air of confidence that happens, even if it's not just a totem animal for somebody, or, you know, even a mandala or a tarot card. I think that just the act of getting a tattoo is already a small act of defiance, because you're always going to have people being like, oh, well, you shouldn't do that, or why would you do that? So for them, it's like a badge of honor. And I've definitely seen people's confidence, you know, come. So, I mean, the most powerful tattoos that I've done are on breast cancer survivors.
Wow.
You know, giving them back a sense of femininity or just reclaiming their body. So one of my clients opted to not get reconstructive surgery. And when they had come in, so she just had complete flat chest. And when she came through the door for the consult to stop by to kind of just show me the scar and everything, she had the softest voice and you couldn't even hear her speak. And she was so low, and she... And then through our transition, and we ended up doing this huge chest plate of like, it was based off of another artist, and I'm totally escaping the artist's name, but it's also based off of that artist is a surrealist like Salvador Dali. So it's these boats with butterflies as sails and hot air balloons with butterflies. Like, it was a transformation piece for her. Towards the end of our session and completing this huge chest plate that she opted, like I said, she opted to just reclaim her body. She was outspoken. She was confident. She, you know, like the transition, it just gave her her power back. Whereas like, and then learning that as a child, she basically was told that her words didn't matter. She shouldn't speak. You know, it was like all this stuff that she reclaimed by just reclaiming her front, you know? So that to me, like every single tattoo is going to give you a little sense of confidence, and each one you get, you're going to reclaim a little bit of like, this is me, take it or leave it, you know? So whether somebody gets a tarot card and says, okay, you know, I've done three of swords cards, I've done nine of wands cards, and they're just reminders for people to be like, okay, I've gone through that, got my merit badge, gone through it, don't need to deal with it anymore. And when they see repeated patterns, they could go, oh yeah, I'm back there. Let's not go that far back.
Right. Oh, because I was thinking, like, I was like, wow, Jamie, she must have like tattooed like the tower or the death card on someone. And,
oh, yeah.
And there's kind of like, I feel like that person's almost buying into the energy of that card in them forever. But as you said, it's like a reminder.
Those are such misunderstood cards, in my opinion. Like, the tower is a blessing. You know, I always think of Pema Chodron saying that, like, when things get too complacent, don't worry, the world is going to just disrupt. Like, you're not meant to just completely live in this space of comfort. You know, like, then what? It's just kind of, then you do, like, the same thing day in and day out. Like, even what's going on right now, we're collectively in a tower moment. So a lot of people are afraid, and I'm not going to discount that, because I know it is, I am very privileged. I have money in savings. I have a roof over my head. I have a thriving Etsy shop. I am not experiencing the same storm as my brothers are. You know what I mean? Like, it's, or even as somebody who didn't even have a job before this all, like, I understand that, and I wholeheartedly get it. But I also understand that my nature, and I can only speak of myself, is how can I use this moment to grow from? So if I have this thing that can still, like, from a money standpoint, generate income, how can I make it work more for me? Like, you know, what have I been wanting to do that I couldn't do because I had this job I didn't like? I'm going to focus on that. You know, like, there's so much potential, but we have to get through that fear. We have to sift through the rubble before we can really be like, I didn't really like the world before it crumbled. Why do I want to go back to it? You know, so that's, like, to me, the tower is like a life-altering event. It could be, a friend of mine once said, and it always sticks in my head, finding out you're pregnant is a tower moment.
Yeah.
Winning the lottery is a tower moment. Your life will never be the same. You know, like, it's not always bad. It's just a shift of life that's never going to be able to get back to how you were. It's like learning something that just clicks everything into place and you go, oh, well, now that I'm smart, I can never be stupid again. You know, like.
that is so true. And, you know, you've obviously had, like, some, like, you know, you have this really amazing personal relationship with the Tower card, and I'm sure all cards in general, because you literally have created a deck. But in a weird way, the question that's coming to me is, because one of your Oracle decks is the Sawyer's Path Oracle, you know, it's all about animals. Is there any animal for you that kind of gives you Tower card vibes, or is there any sort of like a spirit of an animal that kind of takes us into this intense change?
To the tower. Huh, that's a good one. I mean, like, because my animal that I am just, I know life is good if deer are around me. That's my animal. I have a huge one tattooed on my stomach. But I would have to say any animal that is one of action, like one that just, you know, like, I'm going to use like a predator of things. Okay. So maybe like the coyote would possibly be a tower moment, you know, because a coyote is going to come in and they're going to eat your chickens and they're going to, you know, do the things that you don't want them to do. They're hunted. They're all these things, but coyotes, my mom and I were having this huge discussion about coyotes the other day. They are the most adaptable animal. They have changed with everything that we've tried to annihilate them, and they are thriving. They thrive in cityscapes. They come, they're here whether you want it or not. The tower is also Mars, which, you know, is action.
Right.
So it's like, look, that's cool. Whatever you've given me, I'm going to come back and I'm going to just rebuild no matter what. So, but if you're a prey of a coyote, that's not a good thing, you know? So it's like, I think with animals, it's hard for me to, like, just put one card on each animal, because I think depending on the nature of that creature, they have the potential to be a tower.
Right, know? Right. Well, that's what I love so much about what you and your mom, because your mom's the co-creator of the animal oracle deck that you guys made. Mm-hmm. And that's what, like, deeply resonated with me in this tarot deck, was the fact that, you know, it didn't feel like it was like totemanimal.com, like, or whatever, like looking up the spiritual meaning of the animal. It was literally just you and your mom talking about your own life experiences, right, with these animals. And
so my mother, to answer that question, hers would be the bear. Like, if you read the excerpt on the bear, that held such trauma because of the prank that my grandfather and his friend pulled on these small children. They took a bear that was dead and like propped it up as the kids were walking home from the bus stop. Like, ah, my mom to this day is terrified of bears. She lives in the woods of Maine. I'm like, mom, it's a bear. They're more scared of you than you are of them. Like, there's so much trauma attached to it.
Right.
Because of this thing that happened when she was like 8 or however old she was, you know, so.
Right. And the stories, I'm like kind of jealous of all the stories that you and your mom have about all these animals, because I think right now I'm particularly in a time in my life where I really want to relocate somewhere that is like animals, farm,
right,
not city, not suburbs, like somewhere where I can really connect. So I'm like reading this, like your childhood stories, and you have like stories about every animal, and it's just really beautiful. And I think it's a beautiful way to like grow up and then retell the stories of the animals for you and your life.
When I first, like, so I did my tarot deck and then I did my Lenormand deck, which was really easy because 36 cards, this is what you do. The Oracle deck was the hardest for me because I always have connected with animals in a sense of just awe and wonderment and just the fact that they exist. Like, I'll watch the deer outside and I just love them so much. I love that they just show up and then go about their, like, I just love that they're there. You know, I didn't want, and especially when I started creating the deck, there was a huge thing, and I know you've seen it in our community, the tarot community, about appropriation. Mm-hmm. And I'm not Native American. I mean, my ancestry, there was one person years ago who became wife of, and I'm like, no, she was forced to become the wife of one of my ancestors. I understand I have a lot of like ancestral trauma there. Like, I get it. Like, my ancestors were not always good people, and I own that and I understand that. So I'm not going to take a Native American explanation for an animal and put it in my Oracle deck and say, this is what this animal means, because that's not my place to do. So when we did the guidebook, I wanted it, I don't even call it a guidebook, it's the journal, because I want you to find your own connection with those animals. So that's why we shared our stories. And then from our stories, we kind of were like, well, what questions can we ask about these? And so asking you guys to create your own guidebook, because everybody's going to have a different reaction. Like, my husband can't handle snakes. Snakes are his trigger. They terrify him. Me, I grew up playing with snakes on a farm. I lived in a house with a Burmese python when I was 7. Like, snakes to me are fascinating. They shed their skin. They're so essential. They're beautiful creatures. But to my husband, they're traumatic. You know, so a guidebook, if he gets the card of the snake, he's going to be like, that's a horrible card. But if the guidebook says, oh no, snakes are this, no, that's still a horrible card for him. So it's not up to me to tell you what that animal means.
Yeah. Oh, and I love that. And it's actually challenged me as both a reader and an intuitive, because I sometimes, I would say actually spirit does give me a lot of messages through animal imagery when I'm working with someone. And I had this moment, and you'll laugh because it kind of relates to what you've done with your deck in a way. Mm-hmm. I had this moment where I was reading for someone probably like 2 months ago, and I was just seeing so strongly the elephant, and I kind of made the mistake as the reader kind of being like almost over interpreting it and kind of being like, okay, well, what is like Shaman Lala say about
right,
the elephant, and like, isn't the elephant supposed to be like the remover of obstacles and Ganesh and la la la? And you know, the person I read for was just like, I can see that. I can also just see that there's like a huge elephant in the room right now in my life. and I felt dumb because like, I was like, oh man, like I've like, that's why though, it's valuable right. to kind of have your own connections. And
right.
sometimes maybe the animal message isn't that deep.
Right. And also in that same respect, like, yes, we all collectively, if we know anything about Ganesh, we know that they are the, you know, remover of obstacles. But if you're not into that faith, then it doesn't really apply.
Right.
For this client to be like, well, there's a huge elephant in the room. Or they could be like, you know what, as a child, I had an elephant stuffed animal that went with me every single place I went. You know, so it's kind of like, if you get it, you could almost be like, what is an elephant? Like, I feel elephant energy. What does that mean to you? And then it could be like, you know.
Exactly. We forget. We get so caught up in like our own like master interpretation of the image or the symbol, and we forget like, hello, like this can be a little bit more human. Like this can be literally about someone's life, and sometimes we have to like give the mic over to that person, you know.
right. It is. It's all about our interpretation. So that's like with the animal oracle. I think one of the biggest compliments I've gotten so far was from one of my friends, Jenna Matlin, who is an amazing psychic intuitive tarot reader. Jenna just recently relocated with her husband down south. And so she had lived in Philadelphia in the Northeast for a while. And she said that my deck made her feel like she was back at home, like back here, because of all the greenery and all the animals that are in the deck are things that most of them, you know, I don't see sea otters. We don't have those around here, but we have them in a zoo, you know, but like, I just thought they were cute. I needed to add them. They're sea otters. I dreamt about them. That's why they ended up in the deck. But anyway, but so most of the animals in the deck have some sort of connection to me either now or in my childhood. And I've only really lived on the East Coast except for like a year in California. So that's why there's so much greenery. That's why there's very, very specific animals to this region, you know? So it was such a compliment when she was like, it feels like Pennsylvania. I was like,
no, it really does. Like it makes that your deck kind of makes me long to be like a country girl. Like, like I'm like, I want my own horse. I want my own goats. Like, what am I doing? Like,
I was, last summer, my other, it's funny. I have two close friends named Jenna. So the other Jenna Diaz, who is the creator of Moonlit Fae, who does all the bags for me. When she was out visiting me last summer, we were driving down the back roads and she goes, oh my God, that was a red bird. And I was like, looked at her like, yeah, it's a cardinal. And she's like, we don't have those in California. Wow. She's like, I've never seen that before. And then like the lightning bugs out west, their butts don't light up like ours do out here. So she would stand out front and was just watching the lightning bugs. You know, things that we take for granted here, we assume that happens everywhere. It's like, so when I was researching lightning bugs, it was like, not all of them, you know, do the bioluminesce. They, you know, they exist, but they don't create light, you know? And I'm going, well, that's just sad. They can't be called a lightning bug if they don't look like little lights, you know?
Oh my God, it's so true. I wonder if, you know, sometimes there's this notion that like our tarot decks or our oracle decks can sort of like give us almost like not a difficult message, but sort of like call us out on our shit or like something like
that.
And I'm wondering specifically from your animal deck, has there ever been like an animal that really called you out or like an animal that really told you like, this needs to change, or like you need to get real with yourself or something along those lines?
I think a lot of the birds would probably do that for me. Just because like lately the blue jay keeps popping up, and the blue jays, you know, they're jerks around here. Like they're pretty, but they're jerks. They're, you know, the story that I share in the journal was that one day I was watching this blue jay having lunch above my car, and I was like, oh, that's cute. And then I realized it was eating another bird and dropping the feathers on my car. And I was like, wow, that's horrible, you know? But they're also very loud and they yell and they're like, I'm here, listen to me, listen. And so if it keeps coming, it's almost like, what are you not hearing? What is it that you're not seeing? Or are you not being too aggressive? Are you being overly aggressive? Like, you know, so when one of the cards keeps stalking me, then that kind of makes me force a little bit being like, okay, well, why does this keep coming up? You know, like, what am I not seeing? And I think that's true with any kind of card, like the stalker cards, like you're not getting the message. And then when you finally get the message, you won't see that card.
Yep. I think I told you a little bit, but I've been having like a very heart to heart experience with your card, the bee card. And it keeps coming up because, like, you know, with the coronavirus situation, I'm actually in a really cool position right now to really just take my entire business online.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been such a blessing for me, actually. But the bees coming up to remind me that, like business doesn't have to be this, like, yang, money, do. Like the bee has to do with like almost the queen and doing it more from a yin way. So it's coming up, and the animals really do, I'm noticing a pattern of like what the animal is really telling me. And it's been such a gift to just figure that out on my own and not have, like you said, the guidebook saying
right.
He is the master symbol of transformation or whatever
it right. might be. Like you can go and be like, okay, bee, hive mentality. Like you can go down all the things that you know. Like I know when I start thinking about an animal or an insect or whatever, I always go like from surface value, what are they? Like you think of busy bee, you think of hive collective, you know, you think of all for the queen, you think of all these things, but then you're like, what do? They're so essential. The things that bees do, like if we don't have bees, we don't have food. We don't have pollination. Bees are one of the most essential things. And since they're coming to you, it's like your service is still so needed right now.
Mm.
You know, so the bees buzzing around and it's spring and they're coming back and it's like, okay, yeah, this is going on around us, but I still have this purpose to serve.
Right. That is, yeah, no, I love that. You know, I did ask the animal deck, you know, maybe while we're kind of like winding down here with our talk, I did ask the deck before this interview, I kind of asked it like what animal wanted to be brought up in this kind of talk, and the red panda came out, and I thought it was funny because I read the story, and the story was all about you having this very like almost shamanic dream.
It was just a dream.
Yeah, it was
a red panda.
Right. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about that red panda story?
Well, I don't have the book in front of me, so part of me is forgetting what I wrote, but I remember having this dream, and in it there was a red panda, and it was just kind of like walking around with me, and I'm going, okay, but I've always been fascinated by red pandas because A, I love pandas, but they're not even pandas. They're actually closer to foxes than, you know, like if you read about what a red panda is, my mom was like, it's so funny that you bring that up, because she's like, I don't know if we should put this animal in the deck. I'm like, why? Because she read like one article that said that they were horrible creatures. I go, so what? You can't put something in there that has one bad article about it? I was like, where does that come from?
Right. But
for me, it was like they showed up during the time that I would like, if I saw an animal or if I saw a bird or something, I was like, okay, wrote it down that animal needs to go in the deck. And red panda showed up in my dream. Like I said, I don't have the book in front of me, so I don't remember the ins and outs. My attention span goes like this, but I always remember this one video that I saw of a red panda. It was like, you know, one of those viral videos that goes, and it's just like this red panda walking out of its enclosure, and it sees a rock, and it just goes, whoa, and it like stands up as big as it can because it was like faced with adversity, and it just made itself really big and tall. Like, what are you doing here? It's like, who are you? So to me, it was like something that can be very, like, when we see them, we always picture them sleeping on the trees and just flopping over and being almost sloth-like. But when needing to react, they can make themselves bigger than life.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's interesting, too, because we often take, like, our dreams for granted, and we kind of don't pay attention, or we don't write things down. And like in the midst of you creating this deck, like it's sort of like the red panda could not be ignored because it
right.
came in your dream too.
It was like, pick me. You're not going to just have a panda. You're going to have I want to be in there too. Cause they're not, we don't have them in the US. You know, if we do, it's cause they're in a zoo. They're not indigenous to here, you know?
Right.
Like they're not from here. They're not ours. You know, who am I to write about one other than the fact that I think they're adorable?
Exactly. No, it's true. There's so many cute animals in this deck. It was so awesome to get your perspective on so many different things. And just to kind of like wrap up, I wanted to sort of just give the mic to you. And can you tell us a little bit about like what your current artistic projects are now and like what you're working on, and like I know you have the mask project that you're working on, but anything else that you kind of want to share with the audience today about anything?
I never know what's next. I am a guest teacher for Kyla Givehand on Instagram's Kyla Gives, and she's doing a pull pen and paint thing. So I'm a teacher. My class is in October, and we're doing like a deconstructive Lenormand. So it's basically like creating your own. I want to help people create their own Lenormand deck in order to learn the deck. So that's one thing. And then because of that, I was like, oh, maybe I'll do something similar for tarot. I just started it. I'm only like two cards in, but it's basically like some keywords and then a blank space for you to draw your own card, you know, based on some of the keywords. I like engaging people that way. I did start a Patreon. I've been kind of adding random content to it. It's mostly tarot related, but like yesterday I offered a digital journal. I just finished reading Brené Brown's Rising Strong book, which is just amazing. Mm-hmm. And she talks about shitty first drafts. And it's basically like when we get triggered by something to write it down, like let your five-year-old, your inner child, write how that story is feeling to you. So I made a digital journal called Shitty First Draft. And it says, you know, my inner child's shitty first draft. And basically it's just a digital journal that allows you to just write down all the things that nobody's going to see, you know, to help you work through stuff. I'm always creating the tarot casting boards to go with my tile sets. Those are always fun, you know, so.
Yeah, that's never... cool. That's a cool thing that you do. Like that, those casting boards, like, I've really never seen quite anything like it. Like I do read the runes. So I've had some, I've made my own little casting board mm-hmm. for that, but I've never seen someone do it with the tarot, which is interesting.
It's for me, it's, I really love tactile stuff. So I love like, The tarot tile sets were born because I wanted to create a small Lenormand set so that I could just do the full grand tableau in a space like this big, you know? So then I, like I said earlier, when I get an idea, I just, it becomes all consuming and I got to make all the things. So then I was like, oh, I'm going to do my tarot cards. I never thought that it was going to take off the way that it has. And then the tile casting boards is, I have a hard time with tarot cloths.
Yeah.
Like, I can't shuffle on them. They get bunched up. They, you know, so for me, I'm like, I need a hard surface. And we do laser stuff. So I was like, how can I make this work for me? So most of the things that are in my Etsy shop, they were always born out of just me wanting it, you know? So I never know what's going to come up next because I'm like, which some people yell at me. They say I have to be on a creative hiatus because their pockets can't handle it. And I'm like, no, my brain doesn't work like that. It's just got to keep going. So I don't know. I can promise I'm not going to stop creating, but
great. Awesome. Well, curious. I'm excited to see like where this year takes you, especially since, you know, like we kind of said before we started officially recording that, like tattoo artistry is unfortunately not a business right now that can really be done from 6 feet away. So it'll be interesting to see what this space now will provide you with.
Like, right, what can I fill in this 6 foot space that I know that I have now?
Right. Yeah. Cool. Well,
I can't say that there's not another deck in me, but I did just do a print on demand Uno deck.
You are really a jack of all trades then.
I really truly it just comes in and it goes. It's like so
cool. Well I will most definitely put all of your information in the show notes so people can follow you and check out your Etsy shop. And I know I'm definitely not even an inch into really truly exploring the animal deck. So people will be seeing more of your animal deck on my Instagram too, because I love it so much. But thank you so much for taking the time to be here.
Thank you for having me. This has been a fun way to start my Thursday.
Yeah, it's been a fun way to start my day too. Yeah, I know, right? It's like it's Thursday.
Yeah.
Cool, Jamie. Well, we will talk soon, but I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, you too, Mel.
Okay, see you later, Jamie. Bye.
Before you go, I just wanted to say thank you so much to my Patreon supporters. You are all supporting the creation of this podcast in a bigger way than you even realize. If you want to know more about my offerings on Patreon, including access to the Secret Horoscope Witch YouTube channel, the link is in the show notes. I am a professional astrologer, tarot reader, Reiki practitioner, and psychic intuitive. If you are interested in working with me one-on-one or getting a reading from me, you can visit my website, horoscopewitch.com, to learn more about my offerings. If you find this podcast to be helpful, I would greatly appreciate your rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Your reviews not only make my day, but also increase the chances of others finding this podcast too. And if you like this episode, feel free to share it with a friend.